Please start recording first. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to everyone. Welcome to the Uralo Bylaws Task Force call taking place on Wednesday, 10th of May 2017 at 1600 UTC. On the call today, we have Olivier Crepin-Leblanc, Wolf Ludwig, Oksana Prikopka, Jean-Jacques Subrena, Florian Fu, Matthew Cumming, and Eddie Schweighofer. We haven't received any apologies for today's call, and from staff we have Silvia Vivanco and myself, Yeshim Nazar. And as always, finally, I would like to remind everyone to state their name for the transcription purposes. And now I would like to leave the floor to Olivier Crepin-Leblanc. Over to you, Olivier. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Yeshim. Olivier Crepin-Leblanc speaking. And on today's call, we're going to have an update from Florian Hula on the Uralo Bylaws Task Force, and we'll be dealing with three discussions, one on quorum, one on funding and dispute resolution, and the third one on, the one about required elements by ICANN in the bylaws. So we only have 1 hour on this, and we're all under time constraints, and therefore let's go straight to the report on the status by Florian Hula. Goodness, I'm having trouble with names today. Florian, you have the floor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This is Florian Hula. I've revised the former edition, corrected minor mistakes. It's more or less the same as last time. We now have the requirement stated by Swiss law. So from the simply legal perspective, we are good to start and good to go. So except for one thing, we have to state the required quorum for decision making in the different organs and the different boards of the association. And I know we have to incorporate some part of the ICANN requirements, mainly those regarding the associated members or the admission of members. So those we will have put into the bylaws. The rest of the requirements we can, after reviewing them today, I think we can do that without putting them into the bylaws by simply signing a memorandum of understanding with ICANN. So from the simple legal perspective, we are mainly good to go, except for the quorum part. The funding is not really a problem. I know there are different opinions about the issue, but regardless, whichever option
Florian, I'm sorry, Florian, but your sound is coming in and out, and whilst you started quite well, things are a bit muffled right now, so quite a few people are asking if you could either speak closer to the mic or whether you require a dial-out, perhaps. Adobe
yes,
Connect sometimes
is can you hear me now more clearly?
A lot better now, yes. Go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting you.
Perfect. Not a problem. So from the simple legal perspective, we are more or less good to go. The last thing we really require for Swiss law to accept our statute of the association is the decision on quorums. After that, we probably should. It's not required, but it's highly advisable to do some form of dispute resolution, and if it only the ICANN ombudsman, that would be sufficient because Swiss laws are Swiss courts and Swiss civil procedure laws are really really expensive, and I don't think we want in the unfortunate case of litigation, I don't think we want to do that in Switzerland. Are not necessarily as a first step. So that's more or less about the dispute resolution. As soon as we have the quorum and have incorporated some of the required elements by ICANN into the statute, we are good to go. the other elements which are required by ICANN, those which are not concerning membership, admission, the role of members, etc. Those we can put into a memorandum of understanding. That's more or less the report.
That's great. Thank you very much, Florian. It's Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. And so what I would suggest then, since you've provided us a good a summary of everything here, is to then look at each point in turn according to our agenda. So the first point was, well, I think the two really important ones that you mentioned and that we probably have an answer to. First, let's start from behind. The dispute resolution. You said it's probably better to keep it out of the Swiss courts. And I think that we're all pretty much in agreement. I have no idea how expensive Swiss courts are, but I'm sure and whenever someone mentions a court, it's very expensive. I was going to suggest that a natural course of events, of escalation, would be the first step would be with the Uralo board, which doesn't cost anything, which is great. And then the next step, if a dispute is not resolved, or if it involves the Uralo board, that then goes to the ICANN ombudsman, which is the reason why the ombudsman is really there. The ombudsman is there to resolve problems within the ICANN community, not just only at large, but all of ICANN. And the ombudsman is an independent adjudicator on these matters. Florian, you have the floor.
Very much. In addition, I think the two-step system is a really good idea to start with the board and then with the ombudsman. I'd also advise to, in addition, put a bit of a time limit. I'd say like 3-4 months after the dispute arises, you have to send your complaint to the board or the ombudsman. Otherwise, we may look at very, very long time frames for filing complaints.
Okay, thanks for this, Florian. That's a good point, time frames. I'm reading the chat at the same time. So there is support from Jean-Jacques Subrena for the escalation to Uralo board and then ICANN ombudsman. I've seen a green tick from Wolf Ludwig for the process. There's a question from Oksana. Does the Uralo board decision or the ICANN ombudsman have obligatory mandates? So I gather, Oksana, from your question, you're asking whether if the Uralo board decides, makes a decision based on the elements it has, is this decision mandatory? Is this an obligation? I don't know. I don't know if any decision by the ombudsman or by the Uralo board are obligatory, as long as there's no contract per se. So nothing is an obligation as a contract, but it's it has an answer in this way. Florian, you probably know more than I do on this. Would the decision be, perhaps Oksana can explain her question. Oksana Pirotka, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Chiak. Do you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you very well.
I would like to explain my question. We had in our history decision of ombudsman. It was not implemented, unfortunately. I would like to rely on ombudsman decision a lot, and I would like to rely on Uralo board members' decision also. But how we can ensure the implementation of their decisions? Thank you.
Okay, thanks for this, Oksana. It's Olivia speaking. Florian Hüller.
Thank you, this is Florian. Well, If I did understand your question correctly, how can we make it binding? We can make it binding by the same procedure that we use in Austria for associations and also for internal dispute resolution in companies. We say the first two steps are the board, then the ombudsman, and then you can go to the Swiss courts. So the Swiss courts will probably enforce it in the end, but we have two steps before that. We have two chances to resolve any dispute before it goes to court, and that's the important thing. Usually, in most cases, disputes are resolved after the first step, or major cases, maybe the second. No one spends more than 6 or 7 months on litigation in dispute resolution terms. That's only if there are very high money or financial matters. So I don't think we have that problem here.
Okay, thank you for this, Florian. Next is Jean-Jacques Subrenard.
Thank you, Olivier. This is Jean-Jacques speaking. I think that the ombudsman is not entitled to enforce any decision by himself. The nature of his duty is to receive complaints or other motions by the community or by anyone in ICANN or outside of ICANN related to ICANN, but he reports to the board, and therefore it is only the board that can take a decision, perhaps compliant with the recommendation of the ombudsman, but the ombudsman per se cannot take a decision and enforce it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you for this, Jean-Jacques. And when you mean reporting to the board, you mean reporting to the ICANN board?
Yes, sorry, I should have made that clear. Yes, of course. The only authority to whom the ombudsman must report is to the ICANN board of directors. Yes, thanks.
Okay, so if it's Olivier speaking, if I understand correctly, then there is no way to make any decision by the ombudsman binding, or any decision by the Uralo board binding in the legal sense, but we can certainly, these can be part of the escalation process, and if a solution is, I mean, the ombudsman and the Uralo board would bring an amicable resolution forward, and if that doesn't happen, then of course the court is the last opportunity. Is that probably the right way forward?
Yes, from a legal perspective, it's absolutely what we intend to use. Because
sorry, Florian, we can't
and,
hear you again
much
very well.
Yes. Okay. It's easier.
Now we can't hear anything.
No? Hello?
Hello, yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
okay.
Now we can hear you.
Okay. I start to suspect. What do you discuss?
It's dropping out, I'm afraid, Florian.
Florian, this is Lucian speaking. Can we please dial out to you? I think it would be much more easier for all of us.
Okay, yeah, I will try to do that.
So, please share your phone number with me.
Okay.
Yeah, then ICANN will call you on your mobile or your landline, whichever you prefer.
Okay.
Okay,
I
in the meantime...
I think you should have received my message now.
That's not a problem.
Right. So it's Olivier speaking. Just to add to this, I'm reading the chat. So the complaints to the Ombudsman are indeed completely confidential, and the Ombudsman does not provide any public details of decisions and of the cases that are under discussion. But the Ombudsman is able to provide a report that can then be sent publicly with the agreement of all parties, depending on what the report says. And as long as the report does not include third parties that have not been consulted in the publishing of the report. So when it comes down to a decision, none of the decisions are binding, but the threat of court action, of course, is the last level, if you want. But I do not remember any dispute in ICANN that has reached the courts. Any dispute in at large, that has reached the courts. I've certainly been part of a number of disputes and resolutions that have taken place in an amicable manner in regional at large organizations and on the ALAC, with some people saying things that other people did not like, and the solution being a discussion that was brokered by the Ombudsman. And I don't think we need to go any further than this and just say, yeah, it's arbitration, effectively, yes. So the Ombudsman basically is there as a professional mitigator that will bring arbitration between the two, or that will at least try and get the two parties or three parties or as many parties that are needed to reach consensus on a mutually agreed solution. Jean-Jacques Subrenail, you have your hand up. I'll come back to you.
Thank you, Olivier. I wasn't aware that my hand was still up, but yes, I would like to sum up the discussion so far by saying two things. One, as far as I'm aware, the Ombudsman does not have any power of decision, and he doesn't, as a result of that, he doesn't have any possibility to impose or to implement or to obligate any of a party to do this or that. The second thing is that his role, as you rightly pointed out, Olivier, is that of honest arbitration. His role is considered neutral, or his position is considered neutral, and therefore he gives advice on legal grounds and in a confidential manner, and therefore he brings to the parties, both for and against, a legal view and suggests, if that is possible, he suggests a way forward, but he is not possible to implement or to provide sanctions. Thank you.
Go ahead, Jean-Jacques.
No, that was it. The Ombudsman cannot apply sanctions.
Okay, thank you for this. Next is Wolf Ludwig.
Thanks, Olivier. Wolf Ludwig for the records. I think the whole issue is much easier than that, because if we can say for a first step of mediation, it should be the board to deal with it. If the board cannot resolve such a problem by itself, then the next step should be the Ombudsman as a neutral entity at ICANN, even if he cannot enforce any decision. But the resolution from the Ombudsman, if all parties agree, can then be submitted to the General Assembly. And I just want to remind you that the upper authority of the Uralu Association is the General Assembly, but is a total of all members. And they and then they have to take a final decision on it. That's, by the way, the case in most associations I know.
Thank you for this, Wolf. It's Olivia speaking. That's a very good point you're making. So we've got the course of events. We've got Uralu Board as first step, then the ICANN Ombudsman, and finally the General Assembly.
Yes.
And of course, if people are still unhappy with the decision of the General Assembly, then they can do whatever they want. They can go to court.
Then
or whatever
they can go to a court. But if the General Assembly, by its decision, is not violating basic principles of law, the court will always refer to the decision of the General Assembly. And a court, by the way, will never enter into a subject if the General Assembly, the total of all members, have not taken a decision, a prior decision on it.
Okay, excellent. Thank you for this. Next is Eric Schreikhofer. Eric, we are not hearing you at present.
I don't know. Can you hear me?
Now we can hear you, yes.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can now.
Eric Schreikhofer speaking. I'm against the General Assembly as a dispute settlement organ. It's taking political decisions, and in case of disputes, maybe also against the General Assembly. It's not a good option to use the General Assembly to decide this. It gives a very bad flavor, because then it's mostly some kind of looking for a majority, and that shouldn't be the case in case of dispute settlement.
Eric, it's Olivia speaking, but. I mean, the General Assembly would not be the first step. The first step is the Uralu Board. The next step is the Ombudsman. I think it's highly, well, it's very unlikely that things will then reach the General Assembly afterwards. But are you basically saying that you would want to keep the General Assembly out of it? So you just have two steps. First step, Uralu Board. Second step, ICANN Ombudsman. And if that doesn't work, then people can do whatever they want to do in court or outside.
All right. We have arbitration in Austria, so that's three of our members. So that's easy to find another job for the organization, and not very likely that it results in heavy work. They can act as a body for a final dispute settlement. And only if this process has been done wrongly, then it can go to Swiss court.
Okay, so arbitration as the step three, basically. Would you say arbitration in what country at that point?
Based on Swiss law, but mostly the easy arbitration. So we vote as a General Assembly for three of our members, volunteers. They act in the very unlikely case as an arbitration court. So they get the opinion of the Ombudsman, then they can finally decide if the decision is just or not. So this is
okay.
Very unlikely.
So, it's Olivier speaking. So by arbitration, you would then suggest that there would be three Urala members that are picked at random that will then come together and that will decide on arbitration. Is that correct?
Yes, but Urala members, I mean, one of our many volunteers who are interested in doing that, so maybe we find lawyers or judges who have some expertise in dispute settlement, and they may act in this capacity.
Okay, thanks. That's an interesting point. What I would then say is how we select those members of the arbitration, we don't put in the bylaws. That can be done in our rules or procedures. But we put in our bylaws, which have to be broad enough to be able to evolve, but at the same time, they have to be narrow enough to set a clear path. We say, step one, Urala board. Step two, ICANN ombudsman. Step three, an arbitration within Urala. Step four, which is really the last resort, Urala General Assembly. Are you okay with that, Eric?
I would leave out the General Assembly, because
you cannot.
The General Assembly
let's hear from Wolf Ludwig. Yeah, because Wolf believes that, Wolf says that you can't. So Wolf, could you please explain to us?
Wolf Ludwig, for the records again. In any cases and in all questions regarding the association or its members or behavior of its members, the final upper institution for any final decision is the General Assembly. And this is, according to Swiss association law, a must that the General Assembly must have the upper and final authority on decisions. They can overvote the board with a majority of members. You can expel a board. You can expel a leadership. So the final institution in an association is the General Assembly. This you have to respect. Thanks.
Okay, thanks for this, Wolf. Eric Schreikhofer, yes, please.
I agree, Wolf, that the General Assembly is the highest authority and can take any steps in dispute settlement if she likes to do so by majority decision. But if she's not willing to do so, if she's involved, then it's better to leave the final steps to some arbitration or some court.
Okay.
May I quickly step in? Of course, if then a General Assembly has taken a decision, and in the hypothetical case, the party or person concerned is not satisfied with the decision which has been taken by the General Assembly, then of course there is always a last legal option to go to a court. This is clear, or this doesn't exclude each other. But a court will only enter into the subject, in the materia eintreten, when the General Assembly has already considered the question and has already come to a decision on the issue. Thanks.
Thank you, Wolf. Eric Schreikhofer?
Hey, Eric Schreikhofer. I still consider it's more appropriate to leave the General Assembly out of this settlement. The board can do conciliation, mediation, and can involve the General Assembly if necessary. The General Assembly can take action at any time if she likes to do so and settle the dispute.
Okay, thanks for this, Eric. It's Olivier speaking. I see that we have two points of view on this. What I would suggest then here is because we really are looking at an escalation of dispute resolution. We can have first step Urela board. Of course, this is all conditional. You know, if that fails, the ICANN ombudsman is the second step. If that fails, an arbitration with three Urela members to be picked or volunteered in a way that will be explained in the rules of procedure, if that fails, then the matter, because all of the other things have failed, the matter will come into the General Assembly's hands, which could or could not take a decision from that point onwards. And in any case, by that time, I think that the matter will be able to be escalated to anything else out there, whether it's a court in the United States, in Europe, in Switzerland, or wherever it is. But I really think that it's so unlikely that something will go that far, especially after a first attempt at conciliation by the Urela board, a second attempt by the ombudsman, who again is a trained mediator, a third attempt by an arbitration, a group of arbitrators who are volunteers to try and help. By that time, we'll be in such a mess that the General Assembly will have to step in any case. And if it makes a decision, Urela will get sued or taken to court one way or other. So I think that we're kind of arguing now over something which is not that important. We can just put optional next to Urela General Assembly. And then final step, relevant court. Let's put it at that for the time being, and that, you know, then we'll ask if there are any alternative options on the mailing list. And if we have alternative options, then we can discuss about those alternative options now. But I don't see any other alternatives for the time being. I would like to move on to the next thing then, funding. Funding we have spoken about in previous cases, and the first set of Urela bylaws had a whole thing about having a treasurer and external funds, etc. Funding, if one looks at all of the different Urelas, is entirely 100% assured by ICANN. There have been some cases where the Urelas have been funded for additional events, such as sponsorship and so on for their local events. To give you an idea, Urela received some funding from Afelias, received some funding from Google, from a couple of other organizations, I think, in the past. And each time when funding needed to be effected, the funds were either paid into the ICANN account, and dealt with directly with ICANN, or the funds were used to pay a supplier directly when it was funding to go and provide food or equipment or any kind of consumables. So the fact that Urela doesn't have a bank account and does not have any independent means of funding has not stopped Urela from receiving external funding in the past, and it's probably been easier and more convenient to be able to use the ICANN facilities than if we were to have to do things ourselves. Wolf, did you want to say a couple of words on funding? Because I know that you've spent some considerable time looking at this during the first round of bylaw drafting as well.
Well, thanks, Olivier, Wolf Ludwig for the record. This was in the early days before Urela's inception. In the early days was 2006, when some members, founding members, had some very ambitious ideas about what Urela could be or could become one day. And there was this fantasies. There were these fantasies in the room by some people saying, "Okay, we could from Urela, we could approach Afilias, we could approach registries, etc., and all companies, whether they would give some money or sponsor some money for Uralo. And also people afterwards we have spoken with, from affiliates, etc., they all said, for very precise proposals like travel funding to events, etc., or what we had from affiliates for sponsoring social evenings of Uralo in line with ICANN meetings in the past. We punctually had this this kind of a support, but it was always managed via ICANN, and from all the responses we got at the time, we won't have any chance from a sponsor for our operational costs, etc., to get some funding. Therefore, the whole idea which was put or encircled in the bylaws at the time was wishful thinking, was a scenario where many people never believed in, including me. I always took it as a strange idea, and my basic objection at the time already, not to put it into the bylaws or to forget about this this option, my objection was, even in case if one day we would find somebody or we could get money for some sort of independent funding, we would face the next consequences that ICANN could say, okay, you are now independent, you are now self-reliant, there is no reason that ICANN should fund you any longer. So having this as an option can also mean building up a trap that the next consequence would then be not getting funding from ICANN anymore. And therefore, I would still warn to put anything, any option or scenario like this into the Uralo bylaws. I think in the Uralo bylaws regarding resources, there should be a very simple mentioning reference to the memorandum of understanding with ICANN that a major funding for Uralo comes from ICANN. Thanks.
Thanks very much for this, Wolf. It's Olivier speaking. Next is Jean-Jacques Subona.
Thank you, Olivier. This is Jean-Jacques speaking. Yes, I strongly agree with Wolf, and I would say that there are actually two aspects to this. One is that as we are thinking of constituting Uralo under SWIS, then of course we have to abide by the Swiss law. The other thing is that there is, as Wolf pointed out, a trap we should not construct for ourselves, which would be to cut us off from the possibility of ICANN funding. So when you consider these two aspects, it seems to me quite obvious that the task we are faced with is actually to provide to the Swiss legal system the kind of explanation which is truthful and believable. And therefore, I would suggest that instead of going into the long description which you find under Part E, Financial Matters of the Bylaws, number 7, Funds of the Association, well, rather than that, I would go along with Wolf's suggestion that we insert in the Swiss Law Association text we are envisaging a truthful and short description of our reliance on ICANN for funding, and saying that so far that has always been the case. So I don't think that the Swiss authorities would challenge us on that, because it's truthful and that's the way things really operate. Thanks.
Thank you for this, Jean-Jacques. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. Are there any other points of view? I note several people writing in the chat at the time. So the financial matters are in section number 7. There are a number of you've got the Urala bylaws on your the update and so on. But in section 7 of the bylaws, there's a link earlier. You can see on that. Roberto Gaetano says that in the beginning there were some people who wanted to have a financially independent Urala. That idea was that approach was abandoned. Oksana mentions that she believes, Ukrainian law is the best. Okay, that's a different story. Wolf is mentioned that it's a common standard for all railos. And Eric was saying that he believes an association without the option of a bank account is not ideal. Okay, so we could have an option there, but I just wonder if Urala was to create its own bank account, it would need to... I mean, I'm working here now from in the UK. To open a bank account, there are quite a number of steps forward, and it also brings a certain level of liability for those people that are marked as directors of the organization. And I just wonder whether that would mean if opening a bank account would be such a large step that it would probably have to look at changing its bylaws for doing that. I see it as a safety, if you want, so that you don't suddenly have a board that decides to, open a bank account and run debts in the bank account, and then the members of Urala are liable for that or something to that extent. So I think that
if I may I? This is Florian. Regarding
yes,
the liability.
Go ahead, Florian.
Regarding the liability, the Swiss law on associations is very, very clear on that. There is a differentiation between the association and the members. So only the association is liable, not the members. But for that, we have to state where we will receive our funding, how we intend to use it to reach the purpose we have described in the bylaws earlier. And if we do that, we have no liability problem, at least not for the members.
Okay, all right. So thanks for this, Florian. That's helpful.
And
so
and also on another note related to that, for opening a bank account, you don't even need to register it or incorporate in Switzerland. It's enough to have the bylaws.
The bylaws.
So
okay.
It would be rather easy.
Yeah. Thanks for this, Florian. That's very helpful. I'm reading as well at the same time things that are in the chat. Jean-Jacques Supranat mentions that under U.S. law, the step would create huge difficulties, inconsistency between the status of ICANN as a non-profit and one of its small parts. That's also an interesting point. And then we would need, of course, if we go into the into having financing, we'd need a treasurer, we'd need auditors, we'd need all sorts of things. I would be for dropping this whole thing about finance altogether for the time being, as there is no foreseen event that Urala is going to be financially independent, and as in moments when Urala was to receive direct sponsorship from an external organization, it was able to do so via ICANN with very little problem. And in fact, it was, much more easy than had Urala had to deal with it by themselves.
Just to pitch you right in, This is Florian Hule. I do think we have to at least state that Uralo should operate and should be able to operate with money, regardless where it's coming from in the end, because otherwise the association would be not able to pay any bill. And even if it's only, I don't know, a phone bill or something picked up in the restaurant or anything. And even if we are going to be sponsored, we have to state that. We have to state that, yes, maybe Uralo will get some money by sponsoring, and yes, we intend to use that money in accordance with our purpose and our terms of association. Otherwise,
okay.
We don't have the option. Otherwise, we have an association, yes, but we don't have the split liability, so the members would be liable probably. And yeah.
Okay, Florian, it's Olivier speaking. Would you mind then putting some text together that you can send to the email mailing list, and then we can come back to you on that? But we, without a treasurer, without auditors, without all of this additional stuff, let's make it lightweight
and
clause that
of
says
course.
Uralo is able to deal with money, and if it needs to, but it will use the technically it will use the facilities that are already offered by ICANN, something to that extent, yeah?
Yes, of course. We can use as a basis to start from the terms you have in the paper for the last meeting, and just add that we will receive only funding by ICANN, et cetera, et cetera. That's easy enough to do.
All right, thanks for this. Let's then now move on to the third thing. I'm mindful we still have about 12 minutes on our call, the quorum. Quorum is something that has been discussed in the past. I've sent an email out. So we had a task force call on quorum. We had a discussion during the 2016 face-to-face meeting, General Assembly in Helsinki, and it seems to be a difficult one because there's not just one level of quorum, there's several levels of quorum, and that's usually what makes it a little bit more difficult. Let me just give you a link on the agenda. So in the chat, I've put a link which sends you over to a Google Doc and various proposals for quorum. So I invite you to come in on this and have a look at the different proposals that we have here. There is many different options. Option one, the funded face-to-face meeting. So when the at-large structures are funded to come to the face-to-face meeting, General Assembly. Then in column C, you've got a funded face-to-face meeting vote. So you could have a vote that is at a different level than the actual face-to-face meeting itself. So you could say we can start the meeting with a certain quorum, but we also can have a vote only if we reach another level of quorum. Then there is, in column D, non-funded face-to-face meeting, such as the one that we've had in Copenhagen, and we've got non-funded face-to-face meeting vote. And then we've got the quorum for an online meeting and the quorum for an online meeting vote. So these are the different levels. We can certainly have proxies. We can certainly have various ways of representation in the online meeting. Usually it's done with proxies and proxy votes and so on. And you will note that some of the quorum goes to a third of the people. Some of the quorum asks for two-thirds, which is usually seen as a supermajority, and some of them is a half. So if at least half of the people vote yes, then the decision moves forward. So I'm going to open the floor now. Let's proceed methodically. And I see Wolf Ludwig has put his hand up. So, and yeah, in case you're wondering, there were four proposals that we had discussed, Each one was slightly different, as you can see. The ones which we appeared to agree with was one which was a non-funded face-to-face meeting vote, where there needed to be at least half of the people moving forward. And the other ones had a lower quorum. The online meeting votes had a lower quorum, and the funded face-to-face meeting votes had a higher quorum for some people. Simple majority is usually 50%, and the supermajority for like bylaw changes, etc., is a two-thirds majority. Wolf Ludwig, you're first in the queue. You have the floor.
Thanks, Olivier. It's Wolf Ludwig for the records. When I look at this table again now, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me why the quorum for a funded face-to-face meeting is one-third or the same like a non-funded, which is then not a face-to-face meeting. What is what we last time had in Copenhagen. Therefore, there should be, of course, be a difference between the two if members are basically funded to attend a meeting and a general assembly. Then the quorum requirements, in my opinion, should be logically higher than compared to a situation when we had no funding like for Copenhagen. So this doesn't make much sense. Therefore, I would here for the funded face-to-face meeting would say minimum is C, half of it. For a non-funded meeting, it can be one-third, but the levels should be different, and in any case, when we have a funded meeting, we should aim and we should push that to get as many members as possible to the meeting to come up with solid quorums, etc., for any decisions or even for voting. Thanks.
Thanks for this, Wolf. It's Olivier speaking. Are there any other points? Let's do them column by column. So, Wolf, you're saying funded face-to-face meeting quorum and funded face-to-face meeting vote should be higher than the non-funded face-to-face meeting quorum and the non-funded face-to-face meeting vote. That's essentially your point. Eric Schreikhofer, you're next.
Eric Schreikhofer speaking. I am for a much simpler solution, so I am for a quorum of half, and then we decide most decision by simple majority. We may add as an additional precaution that we require half majority, so a minimum number of votes present for the decision, because it would mean that about one quarter of the members can decide in the General Assembly, just have a quorum of one half and a single majority. But if the others are properly informed, it's normally the way it goes. So you have to be present to decide these matters. If you do this very complicated procedure with different variations, it makes life very difficult in practice.
And, thank you.
I may ask.
Yeah. So if I understand you correctly then, Eric, and I'm writing in the Google Doc at the moment, if we are looking at a face-to-face meeting, you would say to start the meeting you'd need half, but to conduct a vote you'd need two-thirds. Would that work?
Yes, that I consider maybe as appropriate, that we should have at least, would mean one-half times two-thirds, have to be as voting members to get valid decisions.
Okay, thanks. How does everyone feel on this?
Okay.
Wolf, you're okay? Oksana? See, Jean-Jacques Subrena is okay with this? Yeah, okay, I only see green ticks. Eric Schreighofer, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, Eric Schreighofer speaking. Yes, I find it quite appropriate. So we have done three requirements. One half quorum, simple majority, but at least two-thirds of one half votes. If the quorum is higher, then the requirement for the votes can be lower.
Okay, that sounds fine then. I can see everyone else is agreeing with this, but Oksana did not. Oksana had a red cross next to her name. Oksana, could you please explain to us what you were objecting to?
Thank you, Chair. Do you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead.
I would like to explain my position. I do not see any great difference between financed General Assembly, not financed, and other, because we have a very great tool as online voting. That is why we can use this tool, but not only during General Assembly, but, for example, for 2 or 3 days. And that is why it's very important for me to ensure that any member of URALO can express his own position, not by proxy or by any other way. By his direct voting. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for this, Oksana. It's Olivier speaking. The reason why we're dealing with higher values for a funded face-to-face meeting is that people, when there is a funded face-to-face meeting, are required to come to the meeting. If they don't come to the meeting, then the meeting, as far as I'm concerned, is a shambles. It's just not representative, and it just shouldn't be able to work out. But for non-funded face-to-face meeting, it's very hard to get people to come to meet face-to-face because they have to self-fund to it. So we would need lower participation levels, such as what we've had to have in Copenhagen. And I'll be very blunt here. I was very disappointed that we had trouble reaching quorum in Copenhagen. I think it was disgraceful of those people that did come to Copenhagen and then didn't turn up during the General Assembly, which is the most important part of the meeting there. But obviously they have, you know, some at-large structure representatives have other priorities, and that will then come later with a set of metrics that will soon be in place as well. And then we will see which at-large structures really are at-large structures and which at-large structures have got other priorities. But for the time being, the voting is, of course, higher for the funded face-to-face meetings than the others. So, Oksana, yes, of course, it would be great if everyone voted for themselves, but unfortunately, most people or many people sometimes can't make it, or they need to send a proxy at a time.
I would like to answer you, Olivier.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Olivier. Oksana Prikhodko. Yes, I know about members which were present in Copenhagen, but which were not present during the General Assembly. And I think that the question of quorum and question of responsibility of of URALO members are quite different. So we have to ensure quorum, and we have to ensure the right of any URALO member to express their will. And another one you have to ensure the responsibilities for not, participating in General Assembly. And if you are funding and if you are not participating in this General Assembly, you have to be punished. I'm sorry, do you understand this? Punished.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for this. Penalized is the word you're looking for.
Penalized. Yes. For example, you will not have the finance for the next General Assembly, or you will be postponed for your voting rights for the next round. It's my just proposition. You have to difference all two these approaches for quorum and for rights and responsibilities.
Yeah, thank you for this. The rights and responsibilities will come later. But for quorum, we're on a half and two-thirds. I've seen you're not 100% on it. I'm not 100% agreeing with this. I've seen Eric is saying quorum half, simple majority, but at least two-sixths. So that's two. That's a third of members voting. I think maybe he mentioned 3/6, perhaps. Or 4/5 or whatever, I don't know. Eric, I'm a little confused about what you were saying here. And Wolfe agrees with the suggestion to penalize non-attending members when funded. That's a good point. Okay. Florin, you have to go now, and yes, we have reached the top of the hour. Can I just ask, we've looked at the first two, funded face-to-face meeting quorum, funded face-to-face meeting vote. Think about those two. Look at the rest of the Google Doc, and if you want, I'll put some spaces below here, and if I can ask you to type in you put your name here, and then you put your choices in the table below here with your time. I think that you all have the ability to write on this. Let me just look at the document. Yeah, everybody can edit this document. So put your name, start putting your things there, and then we can see if we then have agreement, like, for example, the non-funded face-to-face meeting vote, which is this one. I can see that everyone is okay with the half, then we'll be able to say, okay, fine, we've got consensus on that column, and then we'll see. We'll only be able or need to discuss the ones that we don't agree with each other on. If that's okay, then I see things are starting to fill up. Excellent. So I'd like to thank you for this. And because we've run out of time on today's call, I think we've made some good progress. And the next steps are to then follow up on the mailing list, and we'll have another call in a couple of weeks' time, 2-3 weeks' time probably. Seeing how we go. I think we've got an answer now on the funding, an answer on the, we haven't got yet an answer on, we've got dispute resolution answer, funding resolution answer, and the quorum we're working on at present. So that's all I can offer you today. Thanks, everyone, for putting some time into this. And I'd like to thank staff as well, trying to see if there's any other business, any additional points to make. I don't see anyone putting their hand up. I see everyone typing their answers on the document sheet at the moment, so please do that. And thanks, everybody. Have a good, very good rest of the week. This call is now adjourned. Goodbye.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you all. This meeting is now adjourned. Bye-bye.